My guest today is Representative Eric Swalwell. Eric and I have become friends over the last few years. We may disagree on a lot of policy matters, but we have a similar view that the country is under threat right now from anti-democratic, and I mean that in the small D way, forces, and that we face a lot of threats that have come in the last few years because of this rising tide of extremism and authoritarianism. Now, Eric is somebody who has to put up with it every day. He has to deal with people like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz and Lauren Boebert and George Santos, which I think you'll probably hear about during this hour, and does it with a lot of goodwill and a lot of aplomb. And also, he's one of these folks in the Democratic Party that I really like because he likes to get out there and fight. He likes to get out there and stir it up a little bit because, God bless you, my Democratic friends, but you need more people like Eric to go out there and stir it up a little bit.
There was also maintained what was called an enemies list.
Democrats want Republicans dead.
I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody.
The women with the least likelihood of getting pregnant are the ones most worried about having abortions.
On January 6th of 2021, you had tens of thousands of people peacefully protesting.
If you're the president of the United States, you can declassify just by saying it's declassified.
It's not a right-wing conspiracy theory. It's not QAnon. It's real.
I'm Rick Wilson, and this is The Enemies List.
Welcome to The Enemies List, Congressman Eric Swalwell. Eric, great to have you back, my friend. Happy to talk again. So let's lead out right away. What is it like living in the House of Kevin these days? What's the flavor in Congress and the sense and the mood and the entire thing?
Well, I'm just making layups over here, Rick. It's not too hard against these guys, really. They come into these hearings, they're completely unprepared, and they're pretty easy to bat back and beat down, you know, the volleys that they're trying to get across. You know, Matt Gaetz is citing the Global Times of China. Lauren Boebert is referencing policies that were underway during the Trump administration to try and own the Biden administration. And my personal favorite was to own the libs. Matt Gaetz asked the Judiciary Committee to say the Pledge of Allegiance every hearing. And the first person he brings in to say the Pledge of Allegiance is a soldier in his uniform. And one of my colleagues says, well, just in the future, I'm sure this guy's great. Let's just try and vet anyone that you guys are going to bring in. And we've got this back and forth. And one of my Republican colleagues, I'm not shitting you, says, he goes, come on, Democrats. It's not like we're going to bring in somebody who committed murder. Turns out, I think you know where this story's going.
I do.
A journalist did like a 10-second Google search. And Matt Gaetz brought in somebody accused of committing murder.
Of course he did. Of course he did.
It's over here. There's no defense, no three-point shots. These are just layups.
It's a twist on the old Trump line. When the MAGAs send their members of Congress, they're not sending their best.
They don't send their best.
But yeah. I mean, it seems to me like the biggest thing they promised in this election cycle was they were going to use all the committees to do all these investigations on Hunter Biden's laptop and the weaponization of government. And it feels like the entire thing is not even like providing them with like the Fox News fodder they thought it would. It feels like it's just completely like flopped.
Yeah, it's aimless, and also on the big stuff, like a budget, a border bill. You know, that was also promised. As Hakeem Jeffries said, you know, they're in the witness protection program. You know, no one has seen any of them yet, and it's they just can't organize amongst themselves. We saw that for how long it took for them to pick a speaker, and now, you know, they can't put a budget out, so it's hard for the president to know, like, where do you begin a negotiation? You know, we do have, you know, a humanitarian crisis at our border, and they have no solutions. And frankly, I think they want the crisis, not the solutions. They want the theater, you know, not to solve the problem. But Rick, as I look at it, you know, they thankfully do not control the Senate. They don't control the president's pen. So they can knock themselves out. They want to name the AR-15 as the national gun of America. Fine. go ahead. It's not going anywhere. That there's actually a bill to do that. But there's three things that they actually have to do or things go bad us and the rest of the world. We have to pay our bills and extend the debt ceiling, something that Republicans and Democrats have done for decades. We have to fund the government later on this year and avoid a government shutdown. And for this fight, you know, for democracy and human rights over in Europe, we have to keep Ukraine in the fight and Russia on its heels. They can fuck around on everything else, and that's fine. And they'll show the country, you know, just how crazy they are. But on those three serious issues, we need them to be adults. And if they're not adults, then markets collapse. Benefits, you know, don't get mailed out. And armies fall. So it gets real on those three things.
Do you think there are enough, you and I know how the typology of the Republican Party works. About 65, 70 of them are absolute insane fuck, you know, they're gone. They're just, you know, into the ether. Do you think there are enough Republicans to come together and push over, you know, we only need 10, right? Yeah. And you think there are enough Republicans who would have the stones to say, no, Kevin, I'm not. I'm going to vote for a clean debt ceiling. I'm gonna vote to fund the government, and I'm going to stand strong on Ukraine. Are there enough of them? Because I always wonder, you know, just where the courage line falls. Like, what's enough for them to break party lines?
Yeah. They need five, actually. So it's not that many. And there's more than five.
Oh, that's true. I'm sorry. You're right.
Yeah. So if McCarthy just put a bill on the floor to fund the government, a bill on the floor to pay our bills, a bill on the floor to keep Ukraine in the fight, it passes with 300 plus votes. But it's entirely up to him to put it on the floor. And so in his head, he saw how hard it was to just become speaker. Mm-hmm. And if, as you said, the 50 to 75 of them who are completely gone outside the mainstream, chaos agents, what McCarthy is factoring is not what's good for the country, it's what's good for McCarthy. And what's good for McCarthy is to keep that group happy. And he's worried that if he were to put those three pieces of legislation on the floor for a vote, that they wouldn't be happy because it would be Democrats again, you know, delivering, you know, to pay our bills, fund the government, keep Ukraine in the fight. Now, you saw in the past, Paul Ryan and John Boehner, you know, to avoid chaos, they relied on Democratic votes, but they weren't speaker for long. And what I'm convinced of is that Kevin McCarthy, you know, he is entirely interested in the title of speaker, has no interest in doing the job of speaker. And for him, the biggest fear is just being, you know, deposed as speaker. And the threat to the country, as I said, is markets collapse, armies fall, and that would be bad.
It's amazing we have to like actually lay that out for humans in the year 2023 that not paying the government's bills and crashing the stock market is a bad thing. But no, you're absolutely right. I mean, Eric, you've seen him working up close. And you've seen how desperate he is to keep Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz and Andy Biggs and Lauren Boebert and all these other idiots from, you know, strapping on the suicide vest. Because, you know, Matt Gaetz had literally bragged to people here in Florida that I know, people in his hometown, that he told McCarthy, if you bring a debt ceiling bill to the floor, I will remove you as speaker. If you bring a debt ceiling bill, you're gone. Fuck you. It's over. No compromise. No nothing. I want to burn it all down. This nihilism that infects these guys is astounding to me. And it's like Kevin he is the weakest speaker that I can think of, including Bob Livingston, who was only there for like 30 seconds. And this guy has no control of his caucus. You say what you will about Mitch McConnell. When he wants his caucus in line, he gets his caucus in line. Kevin has no control.
He has zero control. And in fact, many members of his conference are at the D.C. jail visiting January 6th terrorists, right? I mean, no speaker in the world. Can you imagine if Speaker Pelosi allowed a delegation to go to Guantanamo Bay, you know, to see if the, you know, September 11 terrorists were being treated?
We're comfy. Yeah, no.
It would never in a million years happen. But because he's a part of this corrupt bargain to be speaker, I call it reoccurring payment plan that he's under, right? So he's got to keep paying every week. So, he's given tapes to Tucker Carlson. George Santos remains in Congress.
Somehow.
Marjorie Taylor Greene is on the Homeland Security Committee. And now there's a delegation, Jail Dell, as I call it, going to visit the D.C. inmates.
It would be comical if we weren't at such a moment in our history where things are so intensely dangerous across so many different domains.
Me naive, though, Rick. I still hope that the bank crisis 2 weeks ago, wakes these guys up. That they see that, you know, if they were getting flooded with the phone calls and text messages that I was getting flooded with from people telling me I'm not going to be able to make my payroll, or employees saying that paycheck ain't coming if this isn't solved. I hope that is a wake-up call. But here's my fear, though. So that whole weekend, we're on Zooms with the FDIC, Treasury.
Everybody being grown-ups for once.
In the afternoon that the solution was presented by Yellen, Biden, and the Fed, for the first time in my time in Congress, we have a bicameral Zoom. So it's both parties, both chambers. And then you've got the Fed on. And because it was thrown together so quickly, it's not like a hosted Zoom where everyone is muted and you have to imagine 400 or so senators and Congress members logging in, trying to figure out the mute button. And so it's a very, but again, we're all freaking out that the economy is going to collapse. People are going to miss their paychecks. And so it's laid out to us what this deal is going to be, how it's going to work. And again, everyone is serious until offhandedly, one of the Fed staffers, she's laying out what caused the bank to collapse in their view. She says something to the effect of, you know, we can't discount the role that online disinformation played in creating panic that led to the run.
Sure.
Cut to Lauren Boebert, screen is black, video on, unmuted, starts screaming into the camera, didn't raise her hand, wasn't called on, just starts screaming, oh, here we go. You know, Joe Biden is going to censor all of us. This is Twitter Files 2.0. And to see, I love the gallery view in this because I just want to see how
everybody's face.
Everyone is just like, who is this fucking crazy lady? We're trying to solve a bank crisis and you're putting out conspiracy theories? So it was chilling, Rick, because she could cause the debt ceiling crisis. She's powerful enough with such a thin majority that she could, tank the whole economy.
Between her and Marjorie Taylor Greene and the 10 or so of them that are really in the that have the sort of social media juice to blow it up.
Yep.
They're all in that, I think at least, they're all in that nihilist camp where they'd love to watch it burn. Yes. They'd love to watch the whole thing go down and hope for the best.
Yep.
But it's like when you're dealing with these people on a day-to-day basis in Congress, I mean, the idea of policy fights used to be something that was definitional in Washington. And you'd sit down, Republicans and Democrats would sit down. And my old theory was nobody ever gets everything they want in D.C. Everybody ends up having to push back and forth. But now it's like the trolling party wants just the shit. They just want to throw things out there, blow things up, mess up. How do you even I don't even know if I can share an elevator with these fucking people.
It's very hard. I found myself in an elevator with George Santos and I was like, how did I let this happen? What was I thinking? So the good news is there are enough of them who want to get shit done. So I chair a subcommittee on Homeland Security, the cyber subcommittee with Andrew Garbarino from New York. Serious guy, wants to solve problems. And it's cyber, again, it's an issue that doesn't sleep and it doesn't care about political parties. And right. I don't think there's any daylight between us on what we need to do. And so I try and find, you know, the wins, you know, where I can take them and hope, as you said, that the outliers, the extremists, aren't able, you know, to tank the whole thing. That's just what you have to worry about and guard against every day. Yeah.
As a listener to this podcast, you know democracy is in danger in America and beyond. This titanic challenge requires a powerful response, and that's why Resolute Square was founded. The Enemies List is part of the Resolute Square family. We're a pro-democracy network. The Enemies List is just one part of Resolute Square's pro-democracy content and coverage. Our members get particularly exciting benefits. Exclusive live roundtable discussions with me, Reed Galen, Stuart Stevens, and Joe Trippi. In those discussions, you can ask us questions directly, as if you were in the room at a campaign strategy session. In these sessions, we'll give folks answers on how to fight back against the crazy, how to push back against the MAGA media, and how to communicate effectively in the battle for our democracy. We're building a new arsenal for democracy, and we could use your support. Head over to resolutesquare.com/enemies to let the world know where you stand. Well, you know, it's funny because I talked to a Wall Street donor guy the other day who said, who is a Republican, and he'd given Kevin a good piece of money. And I said, what are you going to do when this guy loses control? What are you and your colleagues on Wall Street going to do when this guy loses control and the debt ceiling goes belly up? What are you going to do? He goes, well, first off, I'm going to be fucked because we're going to lose everything. And he says, and second off, Kevin's not going to see another dime from anybody on Wall Street if he does this. It's over. He's got to choose, make the crazy lady happy or make the donors who have made it possible for him to sit in that chair, you know, don't kill off every single one of their banks and their hedge funds. And I can't imagine how that guy, I mean, I saw yesterday he's got dogs at least. I can't imagine how he sleeps at night, you know?
But the honeymoon's going to be over soon, right? Because it's going to get real pretty quickly here. June or just before June is when that's coming. And again, I just hope the bank crisis was a wake-up call that, you know, you can play, you can do play Congress all you want.
You can fuck around a lot and some of the small stuff. But when it comes down to the budget, the debt ceiling, and I think you're right. That's a real interesting division inside the Republican caucus right now, because in the Senate, they're still pretty strong on Ukraine. I mean, there's a few idiots. The House still seems to have a meaningful caucus of Republicans that are okay on Ukraine. But I'm wondering what happens when it becomes more of like a litmus test in the presidential race, because, you know, Trump is obviously staked out a pro-Putin position. DeSantis is, he's had three positions so far. God knows what it'll be by this afternoon, but it's generally speaking pro-Putin. And I'm wondering like how much the MAGA side of it is gonna burn that down, because we've done some polling at Lincoln that shows that a lot of older Republican voters, they're still not, they're never going to buy into pro-Putin. They're never going to buy into pro-Russia. It's just not going to happen. They spent, you know, 70 years having the Cold War beat on their heads. How hot do you think that's going to be? I mean, we've got Green and Gates and others basically saying cut it all off. When do you think that debate is going to come, and how do you think it's going to roll?
Yeah, you know, so of course we'll have a National Defense Authorization Act, right, you know, by the end of the year. We'll see how serious they are there, and if they can even bring that up for a vote. You know, again, they have not put their budget out because they can't agree on it. There's a good number of them who do want, you know, serious cuts to Medicare, Social Security. Right. And even Trump now is, you know, he's going to the left of them in this, you know, populist appeal that he's making. Mm-hmm. But Rick, on Ukraine, so two things would happen. I think one is obvious if we did not keep them in the fight. One is not so obvious. The obvious one is that, you know, that they would suffer serious losses. It would demoralize the ranks, and mm-hmm. Zelensky's leadership would be at risk. His ability to still govern would be at risk. That's obvious. Not so obvious, but we already know this play, is that if Russia sees a Republican field of candidates who all would defund the effort in Ukraine, Well, what do you think Russia's going to do? They're going to wait out this war. There's no incentive for them, you know,
drag it out.
Yeah, they're going to drag it out. There's no incentive for, you know, a peace process. And they're probably going to try and influence, you know, the 2024 election if they think that they can get an American president who would be pro-Putin.
Yep. I think that's exactly right. I think that that waiting game is something that Russia's pretty smart about. And it's for the first time in our history that there are people who are not ashamed to be pro-Putin.
That's right.
In Congress. They're not ashamed of it. They're not even pretending. Even during Trump, they would sort of posture as, well, I believe in strong NATO and this and that. And now it's like, yay Vlad.
But also, Rick, the good news on it's good news, bad news. The good news is the bad news is it's state-run media, right? So he can wait it out as long as he wants. He can suffer 250,000, 500,000 losses on the battlefield. Right. And people will be none the wiser. The good news is it's state-run media. If we keep Ukraine in the fight, Putin can declare victory, and victory is whatever he calls it, right? He can tell the people through his state-run media.
We were triumphant and defeated the Nazis or whatever.
Yeah, we kept Ukraine out of NATO. Like, let's throw a parade. And that's an off-ramp. And so as long as we keep pounding them, you know, with what we're providing and what the Ukrainians can do, that's an off-ramp he has. This is I think too often look at this as like a Western lens where, you know, if he's taking all these losses, you know, it's going to be harder for him to declare victory. That's not true at all. He is entirely concerned about his own personal survival.
For sure.
That's right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Eric, what do you think the 2024 map looks like for the Democrats in the House? I think the Senate map is tough, but I think the House map actually is a little more promising.
Yeah, 18 Republicans are in Biden districts, and there were a number of, you know, very, very close contests. You also will see, I believe, Rick, in the courts, some of the seats are going to come back to us. You know, so in Ohio and in Florida and Alabama, maps that were ruled unconstitutional at a lower court, those maps were stayed by the Supreme Court until this upcoming election. And so we expect that'll put a few more seats in play. And again, if we do this right, we will make each Republican in a contested seat own every part of the crazy.
That's the whole strategy, man.
And Republicans are brilliant at doing that. Democrats, we're too virtuous. You know, we will say to ourselves, well, you know, of course, Marjorie Taylor Greene is nuts and proposes all of this, but so-and-so surely doesn't believe that. Well, if so-and-so is quiet, keeps their head down, never speaks out against it, then they should own that. Like, they shouldn't get a free pass on that at all. And so I think we're getting better at that. And you're seeing that with Santos because so many of them are sweating, you know, the proximity to Santos that they have. But as far as I see it, this is their problem. If they wanted him gone, they could expel him. And with Santos, who, again, we're reminding voters every day that they are enabling a wanted international criminal. He's admitted to everything. This
I know. It's astounding.
Yeah, you don't need an indictment to throw the guy out. He has copped to almost every piece of this
and narrative. He's just embarrassing. He's just embarrassing. I mean, it's like I've begged Democrats to like take a lesson from the fact. God, when I was a Republican political consultant, God knows how many ads I made saying, Congressman John Smith says he's a conservative Democrat, but he stands with Nancy Pelosi, you know, and the Republicans did that last time. No matter who the moderate Democrat was, it was like, they're just like Ilhan Omar and they're a radical squad. They want to seize the means of production and impose communism. And it's like, sometimes the Democrats just have to like take off the gloves and whack these people because they really are good at conflating the extreme of anything with everyone else. And the Democrats should pick up that cudgel occasionally and whack back.
Yeah. Anyone who does not condemn going to the DC jail should have to own that, right? Like that,
right.
That's how I see
They're bringing terrorist cookies in jail.
Yeah.
Sorry. That's what it is.
You're even better at this.
Bringing them a cake with a shiv in jail. Is it a conjugal visit? Who knows? Oh God, I'm in trouble for that one. Oh man. Oh, so Eric, one more question, then we'll let you get going. What should Democrats be paying attention to in the next couple of months that will sort of lay out where the 2024 battlefield looks like? I know we've talked about some of it, but with the debt ceiling and other things, what else should they be watching for us, especially in the House as we go forward?
So what I think the formula has to be, I call it a 3D approach. So before every investigative hearing, we discredit the Republicans. So right. Jim Jordan, you want to talk about subpoenas with Hunter Biden, FBI? Guess what? You didn't honor your own subpoena. You have no credibility.
Right.
Debunk anything that they volley over that could land. Make sure that we debunk it. Because again, we know most of it is bullshit. Yes. And then third, and I think this is most important, remind people what we delivered and what we will deliver. And this is where I think Democrats are. We're so modest. And as I said, virtuous, where we don't remind people every day what we did on the jobs and infrastructure bill. And as we are being so modest and virtuous, guess who's showing up at the ribbon cutting and making wallpaper of something that they voted against? The Republicans. On this bank issue, Donald Trump, I promise you, within 72 hours, every bank customer whose payroll was saved by the administration's action would receive a letter from Donald Trump saying,
"Of course,
I just did that." Because the Republicans, their approach was, it's a woke bank, let people miss their paychecks.
Let them die.
We stepped in. And so, I think we have to throw away any modesty and remind people every day what we're doing. So discredit, debunk, and continue to show people what we did deliver and what we will deliver.
Yeah, I think the infrastructure bill was one of those things that really reminded me. Yeah, the first people that did an ad on the infrastructure bill was my group, a bunch of ex-Republicans, because we were like, this is a big deal. Why aren't they taking a victory lap? Why aren't they out there beating the drum on this thing and saying, this is going to bring good things to your community in rural America? Want to get back rural white voters? Go tell them what you're doing with broadband and grid and electricity grid improvements, because it's a big deal. It's a big thing. Yep. So
that's right. And also, by the way, Rick, again, just going back to the shooting layups here, we had a hearing this week on abolishing the ATF that the Republicans held. And one of the witnesses they brought, we did just, again, 10-second Google search. One of the Republican witnesses had tweeted out just a couple months ago, "Fuck the cops." That was all. Fuck the cops. And again, we should remind them that police funding over the last couple years has come from us. These guys, they don't back the blue, they back the coup. They're visiting the terrorists who beat up the cops and the people that they chose. They could bring anyone who walks on earth to a committee hearing. They brought a guy that says, fuck the cops. So we have to pound that in to the mindset of the voter. Always. Otherwise, they won't know.
Always, always. Well, Eric, tell people where they can find you on social media.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, at Rep Swalwell on Twitter is the best play with one L in the middle, at Rep Swalwell.
Well, Eric, thank you, my friend, for coming on today. I look forward to seeing you again soon, and best of luck in the coming battles.
Great. Thanks. My pleasure, Rick.
All right. See you soon. Today on the Enemies List, the gentry Republican class. So, National Review and the traditional Republican conservative writers, they have spent the last part of, it's a year and a half, declaring that Ron DeSantis is 12 feet tall, covered in pure gold. He is the most brilliant man to ever walk the earth. That he is the savior of not only the Republican Party, but Western civilization. And a lot of us have been saying, maybe y'all should pump the brakes on that for two reasons. One, he's not going to win the primary. Trump is. And two, a lot of the things that you're kind of shoehorning into Ron DeSantis are wish casting and aspirational things you wish he believed in. But in fact, he's shown he's, a chip off the old umber block of Donald Trump in terms of his abuse of power, his expansive statism, his authoritarianism. But the reason I want to put you guys on the enemies list this week is very simple. You're mostly harmless. Honestly, you really are mostly harmless. You're perfectly nice people as a rule. But you keep thinking you can get away with avoiding the consequences of accommodating Trump for the last 7 years. And yes, National Review, you did a bold thing in the very beginning of Trump and Trumpism by putting out the Never Trump issue. But, you know, since then, it's just become this sort of like slow slide down into, well, you know, Trump isn't great, but Joe Biden's a communist. Or Trump isn't great, but otherwise it's Sharia law. Come on, people. Get your shit together. You're better than this. You're supposed to be smarter than this. You actually have a moment right now where you should realize something. You should have a hard realization. Donald Trump is going to win the nomination, and every one of you is going to have to make a choice. Are you going to be intellectually honest with yourself and draw a moral equivalence between Donald Trump and Joe Biden and imagine the compromises that you'll have to make in the 4-year window if Trump is president again? Or are you going to do the right thing? I doubt you will, because I know how powerful the gravitational and tidal pull of politics is, but I wish you would. And I want you to think about one long thought. The minute DeSantis collapses, the minute his campaign turns upside down, the minute Trump once again eats everything in the room, you're going to be stuck again. You think I want Trump back? You think we want Trump back? We don't. I would love for Trump to be struck by lightning tomorrow. I would love for Trump to be eaten by a shark. But we live in the real world. And right now, you guys are living in a fantasy world where Ron DeSantis is going to save you, and then you won't have to make the painful choice you're going to have to make very soon of picking America or Trump. You're on the enemies list, folks. Get your shit together. Thanks again for listening to the enemies list. If you have any comments, questions, or if there's someone you'd like to hear on the podcast, hit me up on Twitter at TheRickWilson. Thanks again for the wonderful support you've shown the pod. We're growing fast. It really helps if you will share this with your friends, your family, and anyone else who, like us, is trying to save democracy. While you're at it, if you could rate and review the podcast, I would be very much appreciative. I know this is the sort of thing you've heard a billion times. Please rate, review, like, blah, blah, blah. But you need to do it. It really does help us a lot. We are slaves to the algorithm, my friends. And if you do this, it will help get the pod out further. Anyway, thanks again for listening. I'll see you next time. And remember, whatever you do, stay off the list.